think we're about ready to get started. I have several of my colleagues here in San Francisco with me. Many of you know Glenn Kitzner, and so if you have any brownfield-specific questions, Glenn's here as our project officer extraordinaire, and also Sarah Russell is one of our new project officers joining us here today. So we're any questions before we get started? On the title of today's slide, it's I'm going to move some things around here. Sorry, while I'm ruffling pages, while I'm not on mute. We're going to talk about highlights of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, or the Recovery Act requirements for your brownfields grant. This is an overview of your responsibilities in managing your brownfields cooperative agreement or grant. I'll use the terms interchangeably. We're specifically focusing on the OMB Office of Management and Budget requirements. This is for all Recovery Act grantees, not just EPA. It's government-wide for all Recovery Act grantees. On page 2, the agenda of what we'll be covering today, I'll just highlight some of the terms and conditions that are specific to your brownfield grant that is funded with Recovery Act funds. I'll touch on acres reporting. I'll speak a lot about Section 1512 reporting and give you a general orientation about the reporting that's required government-wide for Recovery Act funding. I'll speak to data quality and record-keeping responsibilities. And the best slides will be the ones, the things to do and remember, a sort of checklist we're providing for you. And there'll be assistance and resource and references, additional material links at the back of the slide deck as well. It's very dense material. I apologize for that in advance. It violates every PowerPoint rule. And but it's really intended as a reference deck for your future reference for quarterly reporting. There again, ask questions as we go. As always, if you have questions later on, your project officer is available for programmatic questions, and your grant specialist is available for administrative questions. So moving to slide 3, Recovery Act specific terms and conditions. There are, for those of you that have had brownfields grants before, there are a different set of terms and conditions than traditional grants, so please read these terms and conditions very carefully. There are a couple things I'll highlight that are different, primarily on reporting frequency. There's the quarterly reporting you're used to, but an emphasis on interim reporting as accomplishments occur. So you'll be required in acres to report accomplishments as they occur versus waiting to the end of the quarter to report them. The terms and conditions vary by the type of grant, whether it's a cleanup grant or an assessment grant or a revolving loan fund. There's an excellent fact sheet that highlights these that's included in the additional resources link in the CLUIN session. And because each of the attendees on the call today has a different type of grant, I'm not going to articulate those differences, but if you have a question, do let me know. But there's an excellent two-page fact sheet PDF file in the additional resources material. On page 4, just a note for you, to highlight some of the specific terms of conditions. The Buy America condition primarily applies to infrastructure. Generally, that doesn't apply to brownfields grants, but it could apply in certain circumstances. So there again, if you have a question about that, we have some specific language, and we can articulate that requirement if you think you're subject to the infrastructure clause. Very important term and condition talking about the demonstration of sufficient progress. And what does that mean? The term sufficient progress is defined as within 1 year of the grant award. So specifically, on your July 30th quarterly report next summer, your project officer will be reviewing that with great care to make sure that significant progress has been demonstrated on the grant. The CCR registration, the contractor, I can't remember the second C, Central Contractor Registration. Thank you, Glenn. And I'll talk about that in a minute, is required through 1512 reporting. The Davis-Bacon Act compliance, and there again, there's an excellent fact sheet that's in the additional resources material if you have any specific questions about Davis-Bacon. Note on that that there's a weekly payroll statement of compliance for contractors as part of the Davis-Bacon requirement. There again, depending on the type of grant that you have, the cost share has been waived or the 60-40 split on loans, so those things have been waived for the Recovery Act funded grants. And then I'm going to talk next about reporting for acres in Section 1512.
Okay. On the demonstration of, this is Lancaster, on the demonstration of sufficient progress, you'll find in your individual terms and conditions what that means. For instance, so it could be conducting community outreach activities, to developing a work plan for your project, to hiring, sending out an RFP. So depending upon the type of grant you have, whether it's assessments, cleanup, or RLF, there are different terms, there are different things you can use to demonstrate that you have made sufficient progress at your site. And your project officer will be be going over with you those things.
All right, thanks, Glenn. On page 5, just to clarify, there are 3 places to report information regarding your Brownfields Cooperative Agreement. There's the property profile form that you're familiar with in ACRES. This is for property-specific information. There's federalreporting.gov, which we're going to spend a lot of time talking about this afternoon, and that's just for projects and activities funded by the Recovery Act. There again, that applies to all programs and all agencies for Recovery Act funding. And the third area is the quarterly progress report that's submitted to your EPA project officer for the management of your cooperative agreement. There again, this is a requirement you're familiar with. On slide 6, there are 2 systems that you report data into. There again, just reiterating, ACRES is the EPA system for Brownfields Program Management Information, and reporting.gov is the site for inbound quarterly recipient reporting, and the reports are posted, the information that's reported into federalreporting.gov will be posted for public review at recovery.gov no later than 30 days after the end of the quarter. That was in the legislation, so that's where the requirement comes from. Later on, I'll give you some information for ACRES training. If you, we're not going to highlight ACRES training too much today, but there are training opportunities coming up, and I've got a URL for that later in the slide deck. On slide 7, these are just some website information resources for you, epa.gov/recovery and epa.gov/region9. As I mentioned, we'll be updating, adding some more managing your Recovery Act grant materials there, so it'll be just an easy place for you to locate some of the materials that are in the additional resources link on this CLUIN session. Also at recovery.gov, that's a federal site managed by the Recovery Accountability and Transparency Board, and you can find lots of information, news, and statistics about the Recovery Act in general. And this is where agencies, including EPA, post our agency and program-level Recovery Act plans. On slide 8, just to emphasize about ACRES reporting frequency, again, report data quarterly or when accomplishments occur. And as Glenn mentioned, that could include START, that could include a load and some sub-grant being signed, or any one of a number of things that demonstrate significant progress. So these interim measures are required to be reported as soon as accomplishment occurs. On slide 9, you're probably very familiar with this, but just to highlight the types of information that's reported in ACRES, the property name and address, the amounts, the start dates, the types of contaminants removed or addressed, institutional controls, and there's the URL where you find ACRES. And there again, this is property-specific program management type information in ACRES. slide 10. This is an overview of federalreporting.gov. It just section 1512 of the Act required reporting that would answer important questions such as who's receiving funds, what activities or projects are being funded with the funding, and the completion status or progress of status and impact they have on job creation and retention. Slide 11, just a little more generically about federalreporting.gov. It's the OMB system that the final data is published at recovery.gov. So everyone that's involved in reporting and review registers there. Registration opened last Monday. So if you haven't registered yet, I'm sure you'll finish this webinar and go register. Prime recipients need a CCR and a DUNS number. Subrecipients only need a DUNS number if they're not reporting directly. So we'll talk a little bit more about delegating reporting, but if subrecipients are not, do not have reporting delegated to them, they only need a DUNS number. Slide 12 is just a picture for people that like pictures versus words. This just shows how federalreporting.gov applies to all federal agencies, and the data is published in recovery.gov that's reported from the prime recipients and the subrecipients. Slide 13, this is the non-English title of the OMB memo. That's the regulatory authority by which the reporting is required. The final guidance memo was published on June 22nd, and there's the URL if you want to read it. It's very thick. The purpose of the presentation today is to really highlight the relevant things out of that guidance that you as a Brownfields grant recipient need to report. So with that, the next couple slides are sort of the who, what, when, where, how, and why. Slide 14, who's required to report under 1512? Prime recipients who receive Recovering Act funding. So the fact that your project officer asks you to participate today, that means you. And you can delegate certain reporting responsibilities to subrecipients if you choose. And we'll go over that a little bit later. On slide 15, what reporting is required? The total amount of funding received and the list of activities and details on subawards and other payments. We'll go into some specific of these data elements later, but that's just kind of an overview of the types of information that's required to be reported. Slide 16, we'll go over some other of the data fields, but there's two types of information, the baseline information, who you are and the funding you received, as well as the quarterly status information. I think it's important to note, probably the October reporting will be the lengthiest because you have to enter all that baseline data, but that's the same every quarter. So then in subsequent quarters, you're just reporting on things that changed, funding expended, jobs created, and that kind of thing. The fields will not be pre-populated, so you'll have to build that baseline information initially. There is a spreadsheet available for download, and I'm going to discuss some more of that later on in the session, but we're recommending that because you can download it and do it offline and then upload the spreadsheet when it's completed. So I think that method is going to be a lot more user-friendly. I'm going to stop here real quick before I go to slide 17 and see if anyone has any questions at this point before we get into some more of the specifics. And we're having technical difficulties, and so if you've submitted a question online, we're going to need to have the contractor that's monitoring the session let us know what they are because we can't see them, and I apologize. All right, slide 17. Initial reports are due October 10th. Reporting period opens October 1st. You have 10 days to submit the initial data at federalreporting.gov. This is a frequent question that lots of people ask, so we include it here. Can the 1512 reporting be combined with other stuff, other reporting requirements, such as the acres reporting for brownfields? And the answer is no. 1512 is specifically an OMB requirement for the Recovery Act funding. And another question we've gotten a lot about this is about quarterly reporting. The quarters align to, you know, the quarter ends September 30th. And so everything we talk about, so regardless of when your grant was awarded, the quarter doesn't start from your grant award date. It's the quarters align. So the quarter is the quarter ending September 30th. So reporting starts October 1st. Page 18 is a graphic depiction of the reporting timelines for people that have that like pictures. Several people have said this is a helpful slide, so it may help you to sort of see the reporting period. That you have 10 days. The prime recipients have 10 days at the following the end of the quarter to input your data. Then you have from day 11 to day 21 to review any sub-recipient reporting and vendor reporting, data that they've reported for their vendors if you have sub-recipient reporting. Days 22 through 28 are when there's agency review of that data, and I'll talk about what that process entails. And then at 30 days after the end of the quarter, the data is published. I'll come back a little bit to each one of those steps. But on slide 19, it just highlights the four major recipient reporting activities: the registration function, the report function, the agency review function, and the public release function. On slide 20, this is a list of the prime recipient reporting requirements. These are the fields. There's a lot of codes that you know, like your DUNS number and your CCR. Either you'll have them or you'll get them. There's codes you probably don't know, like EPA's code for the funding agency code. EPA's code is 6800. You can write that on your slide, but if you lose your slide from today, we're going to have all the codes that you need to populate those fields that are specific to the agency online to help you with that. So we'll have a little have it available on the web so you don't have to remember all the Treasury codes and EPA codes that you'll need. Also, your project officer will have a handy-dandy sheet by their phone to help you. So these are just a list of them, but when the time comes, we'll have information available to help you with these fields that they're the agency fields. On slide 21, the sub-recipient requirements, and let me just give you a definition of a prime recipient. Is a non-federal entity receiving funding directly from the federal government as a grant, loan, or cooperative agreement. So y'all are the prime recipients. What is a sub-recipient? A sub-recipient is a non-federal entity receiving Recovery Act funding from a prime. So if you... For examples for brownfields would be revolving loan fund borrowers or subgrantees, or assessments of revolving loan fund subgrantees. Slide 22 talks about what is a vendor. A vendor example for brownfields is a contractor that you hire for an assessment of revolving loan fund or cleanup activity. Vendor reporting cannot be delegated. So either you or your subrecipient is responsible for vendor reporting. If it's not clear, here hopefully is a distinction that will help you with the difference between a subrecipient and a vendor. A subrecipient performs the mission where a vendor supplies goods and services to indirectly support the mission. Slide 23 is just another schematic that shows how vendor data could be reported through a subrecipient if you've delegated subrecipient reporting responsibilities. Please chime in if that's all just as clear as mud. On slide 24, alternate methods for reporting. I think this is a good slide to remember. There's two alternate methods in addition to the online web form. There's an Excel spreadsheet template that you can download and key in your data and then upload for submission. There's also an XML schema. If you have very sophisticated IT shops and they can speak XML and they want to figure out how to do an XML schema and then populate from existing data systems on your end, you can do that. It's probably only if you have very large amounts of reports. I don't think this is going to be particularly effective for brownfields grantees, but it's available if you have very sophisticated IT shops and want to use it. But the Excel spreadsheet works too. Okay, on slide 25, just a few additional other notes about reporting. And the answer to the question about are waivers granted, the answer is no, waivers will be granted. All primes and any delegated subrecipients must report beginning October 1st. And you need to report basic information even if work hasn't begun on your project yet. And we realize a lot of the grants have just recently been rewarded, and your city councils will start meeting and accepting them and that sort of thing. So there, it may be that over the course of the next month, you haven't had significant work reported, but you still need to report for the period, even if it's just the basic information. I think a thing to highlight on the second slide of part of slide 25 is that this has been debated at length in the halls of government here and elsewhere in Washington. But there's been a decision by the Recovery and Accountability Board to publish the initial data on October the 11th. So I think the point of this is that it's really important for data quality. So while there is a review period in the next the middle 10 days of the month for you to review your subrecipient reported data, and there's an agency review at the end of the cycle, there is going to be initial reporting of the initially reported data. So data quality is a really important thing on initial reporting. On slide 26, just a little bit about jobs created and retained. There is a data field that asks for jobs created, the number of jobs, and it's reported by quarter and it's cumulative. So each job created, it's cumulative by quarter, so you report, if it's throughout the life of the grant, you report that job and any subsequent jobs each quarter. There's a formula in the OMB guidance that goes into this in great depth that is more helpful. But it's just a calculation that if there's part-time jobs, or jobs that are, you know, created later in the quarter, just how to convert them, because the job number is reported as a full-time equivalent number. Slide 27, there's also a narrative description of the jobs. And this relies on, you know, broad labels of categories, and describing the general nature of the work that's specific to your grant. Please note that for the 1512 reporting, the jobs created and retained through the Recovery Act funding is a different calculation than what you've typically reported as jobs leveraged in your brownfields property profile form. So I've given you the links there for both of them so you can see the specific definitions. So just to highlight that it's a different type of calculation. On page 28, there is a service desk helpline for the 1512 specific information. During the busy reporting times, they'll be manned 24 hours. I'm happy to note that it's a West Coast friendly time, that they're open. They don't close at 5 o'clock East Coast time, which I was delighted to see. And the number's listed there. There's also live chat on the site and a way to submit questions. So your first line of questioning, specifically over in this initial period of registration, and clarification on the certain required fields, that's your first stop for assistance if it's not clear. But there are agency and OMB contacts for program-specific questions that if the kind folks at the help desk aren't able to assist you. But I've heard really good feedback so far from colleagues on the responsiveness and the knowledge of the folks at that service desk. So hopefully if you don't, if the material in this presentation and the associated links aren't so incredibly informative, if you have any other questions, they can help you. Okay, on slide 29, a bit about data quality and record keeping. Recipients are responsible for data quality. So you need to maintain records that will enable you to report to EPA on the amount of the Recovery Act funds expended. An example I included there is the Department of Labor forms that you will have for your Davis-Bacon Act compliance monitoring. And also, if you're used to other brownfields grants, please note that EPA project officers will perform on-site advanced monitoring for all of our Recovery Act-funded cooperative agreements. So expect to see your project officer for the annual on-site advanced monitoring. Just a little bit on the scope of the data quality reviews. The agencies will review the data at the toward the end of the reporting period, looking for material omissions and significant errors. And the way the system will work is after day 22, the record becomes locked when the agency review period begins, and EPA will review the reported data, and then if they identify an error, you'll be notified via email, and it will unlock the record so that you can go back and edit it. And then after day 29, the record is locked again. If you have errors that you discover after the 30 days, those will be reported in the next quarterly reporting. So after day 29, there's not an ability to correct that quarter's data. Any corrections would occur in the next quarterly cycle. On page 31, just to let you know, there are three notations on recipient data following the agency review. The record will either be identified as reviewed by agency with no material omissions or significant reporting errors, reviewed with material omissions and significant reporting errors identified, or not reviewed by agency. If the data is not reviewed by the agency, the default is not reviewed by agency, so your project officer will be going in and selecting either the reviewed with no material submissions or reviewed with errors in the review period. So that's a whole lot to go over. There again, this material is intended to keep for reference at, when the time comes in October. But on slide 32, just a couple things to remember and to do. There are prerequisites and planning that are needed for the October 1st reporting, so please start now, particularly on your registration for, I'm sure you have DUNS numbers, but if you need a CCR number, that takes a few days. You are responsible for your reporting and any subrecipient reporting, but you have the material and instructions for reference for both this reporting period and subsequent ones through the life of your cooperative agreement. On page 33, just some recommendations. Register early. I have heard good feedback from folks that have registered since the August 17th open date that it's a painless process. But do try to assemble as much material ahead of time as necessary for your reporting. And for your internal review procedures in advance, identify points of contact for your reporting. There is lots of frequently asked question materials at both the EPA recovery site and the OMB site as well as the federalreporting.gov site. There's lots and lots and lots of frequent questions and reference material online. But on slide 34, just a couple things to start doing now. To get your CCR and DUNS number if you need them. You need a CCR number even if you are not a contractor. If you're a municipality or even if you're not a contractor, it's got the word contractor in it, but you need one even if you're not a contractor. Have your subrecipients register at federalreporting.gov if you're delegating your subrecipient reporting. And please seek assistance if clarification is needed. If you can't find the answers in the materials we've supplied today or online, please contact your project officer and they can refer you to the right place. If the questions relate to the data fields in the 1512 reporting, call that OMB phone number that I gave you on a previous slide, or there's an actual online chat that there people are standing to assist. On slide 35,
can I ask a quick question?
Please.
If you register now on that federal website prior to when the quarterly reports are due, and
yes.
then say after the first quarter you select a consultant and delegate the reports to them, can they go in after the fact and register? Can you somehow delegate that in the system, or how would that work?
I will give you the textbook answer because I haven't actually gone into it and tried to do it, but my understanding is that there can be multiple IDs associated with a single reporting record. I asked the question from a federal perspective. Can we have, you know, more than one PO, project officer, associated with a recipient record for the review process? So
sure.
It's my understanding that there can be multiple folks associated with a single reporting record, but how that's mechanically done, I've not done it yet.
Okay, so I could potentially open a record for myself and then just have them open a new one as a subrecipient and enter subsequent reports.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
So recommendations to register early, and we went through those. The good news is there's lots of information FAQs available. The bad news is there's lots of FAQs and information available. So what we've attempted to do here is to boil it down to links that are specific to your brownfields reporting, because there's a lot out there. Okay, on slide 35, just to mention the things you need to do here starting October 1st, And the slide here talks about the dates of the review cycle that we discussed. But one thing I did want to highlight, there's October 1st, but this is also for subsequent quarterly reporting. And I looked at the calendar for January, and the way the holiday falls and the weekend falls, the 10 days of reporting in January really boils down to 5 business days. So it's a good thing that that's the second reporting period. But there again, just in terms of planning ahead and thinking about your internal review processes and your reporting, January is going to be a short week. I just noticed on the calendar. But also look at your April reporting and your July reporting. And so that's going to be the quarterly cycle. On page 36, there again, just some other references from the Recovery Act site, the reporting.gov site, and the Brownfield site. As I mentioned, we're going to be having a new Region 9 Managing Your Brownfields grant page that will have all this good stuff here, and your project officer can also, your project officer will have this information and references for you as well. Someone asked the question, what happens if you don't report on time? It's a requirement of your grant to report on time. I can only imagine that you won't be lonely if you don't report. Your project officer, agencies have a view-only access to the record before the day 22. So if it gets to be like day 9 and a half and your record's blank, you'll probably be getting a call from your project officer. On slide 37, other training that's available. There's ACRES training that's available on September 8th, and also November 10th. The OMB webinars can be replayed from the URL shown on the slide there. These are the public webinars that OMB offered, I think it was back in July. A lot of the slide materials for the 1512 reporting that's in this presentation were drawn from that. You're welcome to sit at your desk and replay those, but they'll look very, very familiar because a lot of the material here was drawn from those sessions. This session's being recorded and can be played back as well in about a week or two. And also, I encourage your attendance at the Brownfields Conference. It's in November, and there's a link here with more conference information. And as Glenn mentioned, it's in New Orleans. So I want to take a chance to open up for questions again. I'm going to try and figure out from where we are to navigate to the online questions. But if you submitted a question online, I think it's fair to say we can't figure out how to get to them. So please feel free to ask it over the phone.
Hi, this is Pete Riddle with EMS. You guys do have a couple questions queued up from the streaming audio participants. I can start reading them off if nobody on the phone has any questions.
Okay, that'd be great. Thanks. We can't figure out how to get to them. We had them and then we left.
No problem. First one, well, you guys probably already covered this, I think, is from Carolyn Douglas with Region 9. Who is a subrecipient?
Yes, I think we covered that. Someone that's... Yeah. Gets funding directly from the prime.
Yes. Second one is from Jennifer Black Gallagher with DTSC. A little bit long. The state of California has an enterprise 1512 data tool for California state level agencies. So we are not reporting to the website federalreporting.gov as the California state CIO is doing one big push at the state agency level, which does not apply to locals, just the California state entities before October 10th. So do we need to attend this webinar if we are familiar with data elements from ARR 1512 component via our tool? We will still do acres and quarterly reports in addition.
Well, I think actually the last sentence answered the question, and that I was talking about a sophisticated recipient may do the XML schema, which sounds like State of California is doing, but just to highlight that in addition to 1512, there are some specific brownfields terms and conditions as well as the acres reporting frequency and the quarterly reporting, the Davis-Bacon and the sufficient progress. So there are a few specific terms and conditions that were in the training as well, but thanks for that question.
No problem. You got one more, unless anybody else on the phone has thought of one. I guess not. Okay, the last one is from Inair Chu in Oakland. Question about subrecipients and vendors. What if our vendor is a general contractor and they are going to pay the subcontractors that will actually be doing the remediation work? Do the subcontractors have to register on the CCR?
I don't think so, because I think I would ask that question of the OMB help desk. I think what they'll tell you is that since the subrecipient or the prime recipient is responsible for the vendor reporting, that the subcontractor amounts would be part of the vendor reporting. So you would see that through the vendor amount. So I think it's just that one vendor total.
Okay, that was actually it for the streaming audio questions.
Okay, thank you for reading those to us. And there again, for Oakland, I would double check with the 1512 people, but I think I've heard that question asked before, and I'm pretty sure that was the answer. I have, starting on slide 39, I'm just going to breeze through these just to highlight them for you. They're again, very dense material, but they're for your reference. They're, again, some specifics from the OMB trainings. That there's just a picture there on page 39 of, for those of you that are visually oriented, that talk about the federalreporting.gov data flows. some specific language on page 40 from the OMB memo. On page 41, there again is a graphic that shows sort of the connection. I like this picture because it shows the how CCR and DUNS connect and the relationship between the help desk and reporting.gov and recipients. There's just a picture. Some more pictures on pages 42 and 43 are screenshots from federalreporting.gov, but that system went live for registration last Monday, so you can log into it now. Page 44, just a little bit more on the specifics of the jobs creation calculation. Page 45 just highlights again some data quality responsibilities for data and for the oversight agencies and the federal review process. Page 46 is just in text from the dates of the data quality and timing process review from that one chart that was a more visual depiction of the dates. And on page 47, just words, we discussed this about correcting report and the correction and review process in the latter part of the reporting period. So just want to pause for a moment, see if there are any additional questions. I want to thank you so much for your time and attention today. Please note that there were links and PDF materials and the additional resources link in your presentation. I'd like you to encourage you to go to the feedback form, which you can is on the last link on the last page there. It helps us plan for future events and get feedback on that. To remind you that you can play this session back in a couple weeks. Thank you for your questions and for your kind attention. And before we end the session, just one more opportunity for questions.
Oh, I have one more quick question.
Sure.
If you have multiple grants for one city, say there's four different departments within a city, each of those departments that's managing that specific grant has to go on and register separately for each specific grant, or is there one master account for, say, the city as a whole?
You have to report separately for each grant award.
Okay, so each individual, say I was managing four grants, I would go on separately and register four times, even though I'm the contact for four grants?
Yes.
Okay.
But there again, I think that's where the spreadsheet can be helpful. You can download the spreadsheet and then, you know, edit paste the basic information into three once you've done it, and then save them and upload them, you know, with the grant-specific information.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone. You know how to find us. We'll be putting material and updates specifically with these codes. The guidance isn't final from our headquarters yet, so we're waiting just to get verification on all those codes, but we'll have them online, and your project officer will have them as well here in the next couple of weeks, but certainly well in time for you to begin your reporting. So thank you, and please let us on the phone or email if you have any questions later on.